The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. Welcome to the Therapy Suite. I'm Duncan Ellison, a therapeutic counsellor with a focus on positive mental health. This week in the headlines, Robbie Williams speaks about his mental health, and giving your time to charity boosts your mental well-being. These stories and more coming up. I'll be joined in the studio by three guests who are all pioneering positive mental health for Countryside Industries. Music on the way from Ultravox and Paul Weller, and wise words to reflect on. So if good mental health matters to you, then this show is not to be missed. Join me, Duncan Ellison, as we open the doors to the Therapy Suite, only on UK Health Radio. Mental health news making the headlines this week. Holding the hands of a loved one when you're in pain will connect and synchronise breathing, heart rates and brain patterns, a new study has revealed. Two universities in America found that the more empathy a comforting partner feels for pain, the more brain waves fall into sync, resulting in less pain. One, a researcher, said, "We have developed a lot of ways to communicate in the modern world, but now we have fewer physical interactions," said lead author Pavel Goldstein, a postdoctoral pain researcher in cognitive and affective neuroscience. This research illustrates the power and importance of the human touch. Goldstein came up with the experiment during the delivery of his daughter, and he discovered that when he held his wife's hand, it eased her pain. He went on to say, "I wanted to test it out in the lab. Can anyone really decrease pain with touch? And if so, how?" Also this week, Robbie Williams has stated, "He has a disease that wants to kill me," a comment made during a recent interview with the Sun newspaper. He spoke openly about his frame of mind and how he stays healthy and happy. Williams, who is partway through his current tour, said, "Fortunately and unfortunately, when left to my own devices, I'm inclined to sabotage everything. I've got a disease that wants to kill me, and it's in my head, so I have to guard against it." He goes on to say, "Sometimes it overwhelms me, and sometimes it's a tool I need to get on stage. Sometimes I live in bliss, and it's wonderful. But most of the time I'm human, having a human experience, trying to deal with the trials and tribulations of what goes on between my ears." This isn't the first time the star has spoke candidly about his health. Back in December 2017, he detailed the events that caused tour dates to be cancelled 3 months earlier, after a doctor found abnormalities in his brain. In September 2017, he opened up to the Times newspaper about his mental well-being, explaining how fame has affected him. While some people have little anxiety about the Earth's changing climate, others are experiencing high levels of stress and even depression based on their perception of the threat of global climate change. Psychological responses to climate change seem to vary based on what type of concern people show for the environment, with those highly concerned about the planet's animals and plants experiencing the most amount of stress. As reports of freak weather continue to rise, scientists have set out to learn more about how people's perception of the threat of global climate change affects their mental health. A lead scientist conducting the research said, "People who worry about animals and nature tend to have a more planetary outlook and think of bigger picture issues." Finally, giving up time for charity work is found to boost mental well-being as people get older. A new UK-based study found that volunteering was associated with increased mental well-being, but mainly in adults aged between 40 and 70. Researchers used data from the British Household Panel Survey, which is an ongoing survey designed to track social and public health trends. Researchers found that generally, people's health and mental well-being score got worse as they got older. However, when people got over the age of 40 to 45, while scores generally continued to get worse for those who never volunteered, they got better for those who did. Looking back at the news this week, what do you think to the new study by pain researchers showing that when a romantic partner holds hands with a partner in pain, their brainwaves sync and pain subsides? So how exactly could coupling of brain activity with an empathic partner kill pain? In a new study, which is the latest in a growing body of research exploring a phenomenon known as interpersonal synchronization, in which people psychologically mirror the people they are with, it is the first to look at brainwave synchronization in the context of pain and offers a new insight into the role of brain-to-brain coupling in touch-induced healing. Now, I find this fascinating. But more studies are needed, according to the research team, who offer a few possible explanations. Empathic touch can make a person feel understood, which in turn, according to previous studies, could activate pain-killing reward mechanisms in the brain. So in simple terms, to reduce pain, we need to hold hands more. And that can't be a bad thing. We also heard in the news that Robbie Williams, who spoke openly about his struggles with depression and addiction in the past, has also explained in a recent interview how he believes living in the spotlight has been a major cause of his illness. Robbie told The Times, "I don't know if I'd be this mentally ill without fame. I don't think it would be as gross or as powerful if it hadn't have been for the fame itself. You get a magnifying glass in the shape of the world's attention, and your defects will obviously magnify too. I'm not moaning about it," he said. "I would still have signed up. I'm just saying, when it happens to me." He added, "This job is really bad for my mental health. It's going to kill me, unless I view it a different way." Robbie cited being a chronic people pleaser as one of the reasons he thinks fame has had such a negative impact on his health, saying his desire to appease fans often leads to a sort of exasperation, as he finds many social situations traumatic. We know that Robbie previously spent time in rehab back in 2007, where he was treated for addiction to speed, acid, heroin, cocaine and prescription drugs. He has also battled alcohol addiction and continues to struggle with anxiety. He admitted, though, he's always been able to hide his mental health problems, but has now chosen to speak out about them. So how do you feel about the environment and global warming? A recent report suggests people who worry about animals and nature tend to have a more planetary outlook and think of bigger picture issues. Can you relate to that? For these people, one scientist said, the global phenomenon of climate change very clearly affects those bigger picture environmental things. So they have the most pronounced worry. Climate change has evident physical and mental health effects if you look at certain outcomes such as hurricanes. But also we need to pay very close attention to the mental health of people in everyday life, as we can see this potentially as a creeping development. They go on to say, understanding that there are differences in how people are motivated is very important for finding ways to address this, whether in the form of intervention or prevention. Now, I find this really interesting, how the state of the planet affects the state of our minds. We are more closely linked to the Earth and the environment than perhaps we realise. And this alone should focus our attention on the consequences of climate change. Finally, in the news this week, we heard that giving up time for charity work has found to boost mental well-being. Researchers have found that generally, people's health and mental well-being got worse as they got older. However, when people get over the age of 40 to 45, mental health scores generally improved. People who volunteer may have better health scores because they feel healthy, active, and in a good state of well-being, and are more likely to go out and volunteer to help others than those who feel in poor health. It could be said that better well-being probably makes you more inclined to help others, and helping others probably boosts your sense of well-being. The demand for volunteers is always high, And there is always somebody who you can help or something you can do to make the world a better place. So if you are looking to increase your mental health score or just looking to feel better, why don't you explore how volunteering in your community could help you?
I've been suffering from mental health problems since I was 17 years old. I found it impossible to hold down a job, a relationship, or enjoy any kind of social life. I found out about mine through the mental health team I was under, and once referred, I started going to a local gardening project they ran. I was instantly made to feel welcomed by members of staff and members alike. After being a member for about a year, I started to drive a couple of days a week, taking members to horse riding, outings and outreach projects. My confidence started to grow and I started to help out in the centre a couple of days a week, helping members with internet research, setting up smartphones, email accounts, sometimes just a chat and a coffee. It gives me a great sense of satisfaction to help out an organisation that has helped me so much. I can manage my mental health a bit better than I could a few years ago, and this is thanks mostly to Mind or to people they've put me in touch with. If I'm having a bad day or find something too much, there's always someone I can turn to. The flexibility of volunteering allows me to attend my appointments and manage my mental health when needed. I've also done some campaigning through Mind and Rethink to try and break the stigma of mental health and to give people a voice and, you know, for other people to know that you're not alone and, you know, there are other people like us. I can recommend volunteering to anyone. You can make a difference in someone else's life and make their day that little bit much easier. And it's great.
The Therapy Suite.
Memory.
You're listening to The Therapy Suite on UK Health Radio. Coming up, mental health in the countryside. I'll be joined by three guests who are all working toward positive mental health in rural areas. Wise words on the way, music from Paul Weller stills come. Deborah McCabe will also be here sharing her thoughts on meditation and the prospect of putting your phone down, if only for a few hours. Now, I just want you to take a moment and stop what you are doing to consider where your vegetables, milk, and meat come from, and the effort that goes into the production of these food sources. When scanning through the aisles of the supermarket, it's easy to forget the backstory, and indeed the importance of the agricultural community. I wonder if you've ever driven down a country lane and said to yourself, I could live here with the peace and quiet, not being disturbed by anyone. At face value, that sounds like the perfect lifestyle to clear your head away from the stresses of modern life. But for some, this is exactly the trigger point for fragile mental health. The Office of National Statistics shows that one person associated with agriculture commits suicide every week. Whilst that might sound a lot, given that every suicide affects at least 20 individuals, the numbers soon multiply, and under 25s are just at risk of those 65 and older. Charles Smith, chief executive of the Farming Community Network, said, when it comes to important farm safety equipment, people usually think of tractor roll bars, shedding gates for livestock, and high-vis clothing. But there is another piece of kit which, when used properly, is even better: the mind. It is very easy to underestimate just how important the mind is when it comes to farming. Along with the body, it is, without doubt, the best bit of kit a farmer can have. A campaign to support those with mental health issues in rural areas called Mind Your Head hopes to increase understanding of how to support those dealing with mental health issues and educate people on access to advice and guidance in local areas. The new campaign looks back at farmers who, in the past, have not had such a good record when it comes to taking care of themselves and their own well-being. Former president of the Wales Federation of Young Farmers Clubs and international rugby referee Nigel Owens backed the initiative after suffering from mental health issues in his mid-20s. Speaking from experience, he said failure to open up often leads to anxiety and depression. The mind is a powerful tool, which can be positive and helpful, as well as negative and destructive. Owens went on to say, I'm delighted to support the Mind Your Head campaign, because the farming community need to know they are not alone and that there should be no taboo about asking for help. Dr. David Middleton, a psychiatrist who's married to a farmer, suggests overall, people living in the countryside probably have better mental health than those in towns or cities. However, those who do develop mental illnesses are less likely to seek help than their city-based counterparts. It is a harsh reality that access to highly lethal means, such as firearms, poisons, and machinery, result in large proportions of suicide attempts in farmers. This means that even impulsive, spontaneous attempts claim many lives. And limiting access to such lethal means when a person is depressed or suicidal may just save their life and enable them to get a chance to seek the help that they need. I'm joined in the studio by three people all connected to mental health in rural communities. Emma Picton-Jones, a 30-year-old farmer's wife from Pembrokeshire, whose husband Daniel committed suicide in July 2016 after leaving a lengthy suicide note depicting his mental state of mind, which has prompted her to speak out about stress and depression. Stephanie Barclay from the Farm Safety Foundation, and Aaron Nike, a Nuffield scholar who published a lengthy research paper in supporting farmer well-being, addressing mental health in agriculture and horticulture. Thank you for taking the time to visit UK Health Radio. It's a real pleasure to have your company. I would guess that many people assume that living and working in the countryside offers better psychological prospects, but this is not always the case. How do you think mental health is affecting people who work in rural industries?
I think it's widely accepted that agriculture and horticulture can be a stressful occupation. And I think what is unique is the way that people in the industry are exposed to a unique combination of stresses, whether that's working such long hours, often alone, whether it's the complex range of regulatory red tape that they have to deal with. In recent years, financial returns have not been so good, and we know that many farm businesses are under considerable financial pressure or carrying large amounts of debt. And then we have the sort of unpredictable factors that can have a huge impact, such as something like weather, which is ultimately out of one's control. So it's understandable how all of this can take its toll and cause stress. Our frontline charities that support the farming community report increased numbers of people calling their helplines, and many of those will be cases where there's difficulties with stress and mental health. And we know that stress is often a key factor in many of the accidents, injuries, and illnesses taking place on farms each year, because people are driven to risky decisions or carelessness because they're lacking sharpness due to being stressed or overwhelmed. And actually, the agriculture industry doesn't have a good track record in that regard. It's actually one of the most dangerous in terms of the numbers of accidents and fatalities. England's National Suicide Prevention Strategy identifies farmers as one of the highest risk occupational groups. And sadly, we know each year around 50 farmers in the UK die by suicide. So I'm not trying to portray that somehow all farmers are stressed, depressed, or suicidal, but it's clear that there are some real difficulties with regards to mental health, and it's encouraging that this is something that the UK farming community is now gradually beginning to speak about a lot more.
Mental health has a massive impact on the agricultural industry currently. At the moment, the statistics show that one farmer per week is taking his own life. And this is obviously, you know, a huge issue within our industry. I think the reasons that it is so prominent within the agricultural sector is because we are a male-dominated sector, and 75% of men are more likely to take their own lives than women. So I think that because we're a hugely male-dominated sector, it's a very traditional sector, and it's a hugely isolated sector, it means that all of these issues that come along with mental health are hugely amplified.
UK farmers are renowned for the attention that they give to their livestock, crops and machinery, but it seems they don't have such a good record when it comes to themselves and their own well-being. Levels of depression in the industry are thought to be increasing, and suicide rates in agricultural workers are among the highest of any occupational group. According to the Health and Safety Executive's Helping GB Workwell strategy, mental health and depression in particular affects 1 in 5 people. That could equate to 20% of the whole farming workforce. And alarmingly, suicide by occupation, more than one agricultural worker every week in the UK dies by suicide.
So do you think mental health differs in rural areas compared to urban locations?
Obviously, rural areas mean that people may be exposed to a certain amount of remoteness and isolation. So farmers, therefore, may feel a level of social disconnection, and for a lot of them, it can be quite lonely. Not all farmers have those strong, supportive or social networks to help them remain connected to the outside world beyond the farm. And during my travels as part of my study, I met quite a few farmers who would speak of how the vet or the tanker driver might be the only person they may see for days. And of course, in those more remote rural areas, they may lack the facilities that we often take for granted in the more populated urban areas. So, for instance, if we are looking to access support from health services, for instance, that might be a challenge. Then, of course, you have the fact that rural and farming areas are often, you know, very close communities where there's a sense that everybody knows your business. And so this brings that level of visibility that people feel, meaning that if one is struggling emotionally and looking to seek help and support, they may feel extra pressure from this goldfish bowl effect. And especially when we're dealing with a subject such as mental health, which there is a lot of taboo and stigma surrounding it, people may feel that they're being sort of judged because of this visibility, and this can also amplify or make this situation more difficult.
I think the mental health is very different in rural communities. I think that we're when growing up and living in a rural community is a very different, it's obviously a very different place, but I think the support that's needed is obviously very different. I think that in towns and cities, you're far more able to live anonymously, and you're able to kind of get support without you know, everybody around you sort of knowing about it. But unfortunately, everybody, especially in, you know, in the area I live in, everyone knows where those places are that councillors work from. And so if you're seen going into that building, you know, that's, you know, a lot of people will find out about it, and it, you know, it can cause a huge amount of anxiety. So I think that, you know, that it's imperative that the support that's given in rural communities is specific for that community, and it's not, it can't just go along with the generic support that is given to everybody else. It has to be tailored specifically to what it needs, and that means support which is available for 24/7. You know, within the farming community, you don't work 9 till 5. You know, you can't access support systems that are available from 10 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, you can't go to a counselling session if it's during the time that you're supposed to be milking, and also, you know, the pressures that come along with farming, you can't just drop everything and go.
Mental health is different in rural areas compared to cities, because people that are working in this industry are working on their own. They're not surrounded by people. They're not in an office every day. So they could be leaving the house at 6 o'clock in the morning, not coming back till maybe 8 o'clock at night, and not having spoken to one other person throughout the day. If you can imagine, all that time spent on your own can make something that is quite a small issue in your head into something that becomes really quite significant. There are other pressures such as weather, financial pressures, fluctuations in market prices. There are so many things affecting the industry right now, and your mental health has got to be something that they really do need to take seriously.
At face value, a career today in agriculture would seem to be quite an unpopular choice. Do you think this is the case?
I think for a number of years it's been common to hear this narrative that most of our farmers in the UK are ageing, they're in their late 50s or 60s, and meanwhile it's getting difficult to attract younger people into farming. And for instance, that many farmers, their children don't necessarily want to take over the farm. And yes, this is obviously true in some cases, and that might be due to a number of different reasons. However, I think there is lots to be positive about. In recent years, we've heard that our land-based colleges and institutions are seeing increased numbers of people taking up agricultural-related courses. And in the UK, for instance, we have a really strong National Federation of Young Farmer Clubs. These are a network of clubs for those who are interested in or somehow involved in agriculture or rural life in general. And the fact that these clubs seem to be thriving suggests to me that there seems to be a real enthusiasm for the farming profession amongst young people. This young farming community is tremendously supportive of each other. They're often driving forward many initiatives relating to mental health and well-being. One example, for instance, they created a fantastic initiative called Rural Plus, which was all about helping rural young people who may be experiencing isolation and struggles with mental health. Young farmer clubs are also continually raising funds to support some of our frontline farming charities. And I think when it comes to mental health, the younger generation have tended to grow up with less stigma around the subject, and therefore they seem more prepared to tackle it head on and perhaps find it easier than the older generations to speak openly about it. And I think we're definitely seeing those younger people involved in farming doing that, and I think that's really positive and encouraging.
Agriculture is something that you're born into, and if you're part of that, then it never leaves you. But unfortunately, as sort of time has gone on in recent years, the problem has been not with so much as negativity as with the lack of funding available within the agricultural sector and the need for people within agriculture to diversify. And sometimes that means the younger generation having to go out and find alternative work to support the farm. And you see more and more these days, you know, younger farmers are diversifying. You've got young people, young men especially coming up who are going into contracting alongside farming, you know, working, doing other jobs, diversifying in the sense of, you know, some people creating meat products, some people are creating new dairy products. You know, it's a hugely sort of different time to what it was when my father went into the agricultural sector. So I think that rather than it's negativity prohibiting people, it's actually the state that the agricultural sector finds itself in currently.
You may think that this means that young people are not considering a life in agriculture, but you couldn't be more wrong. There are currently 19,000 young people studying agriculture at the moment at university. That's a 4.6 increase in people that have actually studied it over the last year. It is one of the fastest growing subjects at further education level. Now, this is fantastic because it is a great subject. The colleges and the quality of teaching throughout the colleges in the UK is fantastic. The good thing is that these colleges are very, very supportive of looking after the physical and mental well-being of their students. They sign up to our Introduction to Farm Safety Days. We're now bringing in mental health and mental well-being into that because it is about the physical and mental well-being of the farmer. That is farm safety. These students who are equipped with this knowledge and also with the right attitudes and knowing the places to go for support are going to be the people that will bring the good behaviours into the industry and to start to attack and to start to remedy this poor safety record that unfortunately the industry has developed over the past couple of years.
Turning to you, Aaron, you've done a lot of research in better mental resilience in farming production. I'm wondering what more can be done to improve workforce mental health.
It's clear that the stresses and pressures of farming are not going away. In fact, they may be more on the horizon as the uncertainties created by Brexit will bring additional anxiety for some in the agriculture sector. So I think there is a need to support people in helping them to invest in building their mental and emotional resilience so that they are better able to cope with these ups and downs of farming life. When I visited Australia and New Zealand as part of my Nuffield study, this is very much what I saw going on there. There was a lot of work communicating to farmers how they can get better balance into their life, and a lot of that was about the basics of ensuring they get better nutrition, exercise, and sleep. For instance, I met groups of farmers who'd formed teams in order to exercise together so that they could improve their health and fitness. I met groups of kiwi fruit growers who were being coached by sleep doctors on how to have a productive night's sleep. There were groups of farmers learning practical breathing techniques to help them manage stress. And thousands of farmers had been through workshops on healthy thinking to help them develop the mental strength. And I even came across a cattle farmer who had turned into a yoga instructor and created his own form of tractor yoga that he was teaching to fellow farmers. Most of all, though, I think we need to encourage people to speak out about their struggles with mental health and keep a conversation going about the levels of stress and mental health in the farming community. The more people speak about it, it effectively gives other people permission to do the same, and by doing that we continue breaking down the stigma and taboo that's typically surrounded the issue. And obviously agriculture remains a male-dominated industry, and it's well acknowledged that men compared to women typically have difficulty admitting to feeling emotionally vulnerable and for asking for help. And I would say that this is particularly the case with farming men who over generations have perhaps been conditioned to believe that they have to be strong. And I would say farming men are typically very independent, very self-reliant. They're used to coming up with solutions. They're used to fixing practical problems. So farming men really find it difficult to admit to struggle or difficulty, as they can interpret that as that in somehow they have failed. So if we can gradually erode some of these beliefs and attitudes and encourage people to seek help, I think that is one of the most important things. And actually, the farming world is really fortunate because it is a tremendously community-minded community, and we have a network of wonderful charitable organizations that can provide practical and pastoral support if people are struggling with mental health and some of the other difficulties that come with farming. Yes, we need to see that these organizations continue to be well-resourced, yet the help is out there if people are prepared to seek it. And this is very much what we're trying to do through the Mind Your Head campaign that we've been running through the Farm Safety Foundation.
Stephanie, you represent the Farm Safety Foundation. Perhaps you could tell us more about the aims and objectives of this initiative.
The Farm Safety Foundation is a charity that was set up in 2014 by rural insurers NFU Mutual to help raise awareness of farm safety among the next generation of farmers. Our aim is to have zero avoidable deaths on farms. Agriculture has the poorest safety record of any occupation in the UK. It accounts for 1.5% of the workforce, but nearly 20% of all workplace fatalities. Putting that in context, 27 farm workers lost their lives in the workplace last year. We work all year round to ensure the next generation understand how to be safe on farms, issues they could face, and get them to challenge and change the risk-taking behaviours that are so prevalent in the industry. We do this through education. We've trained 3,500 agricultural students in about 38 colleges across the UK. We've also trained an additional 1,000 young farming club members who may not be actually at colleges, so we work very closely with the young farmers clubs. To date, we focus on the physical well-being of the farmer. However, by doing this campaign, what we want to do is actually fulfil one of the key objectives that we have, which is preserve and protect the mental and physical well-being of farm workers, dwellers and the rural community. In an industry with the poorest safety record of any occupation, stress is a key factor in many of the accidents, injuries and illnesses taking place on farms. Stress is something that many farmers face at points, and it's an important contributor to mental health problems. It can come from many sources, such as financial pressure, livestock disease, poor harvests, marketing conditions, concerns about Brexit, policies, admin, legislation. All of these things can come together in a perfect storm and create a situation when a farmer sees that there's no way out. The reason we did Mind Your Head is to let people know that there is always a way out. There are always there people there that are willing to work with them, to talk to them, give them help. All they need to do is ask.
For anyone who's interested, the Farm Safety Foundation have spearheaded this brand new campaign, which aims to encourage farmers and farming families not to neglect themselves, but to put themselves first, open up and get some help and advice on whatever concerns they have. The website for this is www.yellowwellies.org/mind-your-head. That's www.yellowwellies.org/mind-your-head. Lindsay Sinclair is the Group Chief Executive of NFU Mutual. He said, "We believe that mental health is an issue that is very much at the heart of the farming community, but one that few farmers feel comfortable discussing. The purpose of this campaign is to encourage conversations and address the stigma surrounding mental well-being. It's about looking out for each other, reminding farmers to mind your head, and letting them know that there are organisations out there who want to help. The pressures of farming aren't going to disappear, so as a farmer you do need resilience, smart strategies and specific skills to live well and farm well. And the first step to improving your mental well-being can be as simple as talking to someone." Coming up, we'll hear more from Emma Picton-Jones, who is going to tell us about her journey following the death of her husband. In the meantime, here's Ed Ford, Chairman of the National Federation of Young Farmers.
One of the biggest issues we have in farming is talking about mental health. Farmers are incredibly proud people and will not ask for help, yet it is incredibly common. Isolation within the farming industry is a huge factor when it comes to mental health. It can be a very secluded job, friends aren't often about, there's not a lot of people about. The other contributing factor is finances. If you're an arable farmer, you can go 9 or 10 months without any income. Some farmers are often living market day to market day. The animals get fed and the farmer doesn't sometimes, and that's what it does come down to. Often it's the lots and lots of little things happening. So one bill here, one bill there, the market crashes, you get a disease within some of your cattle, and they add up and they add up and add up. They're all very small things. And it just takes one more little thing and it tips you over the edge. How can we address this huge problem within the industry? You've got to talk to people. It's just asking someone, you know, are you okay? Are you really okay? Raising the awareness about mental health, and it's knowing the right people, knowing the right charities to go to. The help is there if you want it. Just talk about it.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. Do something to me. Something deep inside. I'll never find. Do something wonderful. Chase it all away. Mixing my emotions. Throws me back again. Paul Weller plays on UK Health Radio, and you're listening to Duncan Ellison with the Therapy Suite. It's great to have your company this week, and I hope you're enjoying the show. Before we move on, if you have a mental health story to tell, whether it's your journey or someone close to you, or if you run a mental health project, do get in touch either on Twitter at Duncan_Ellison or email me at Duncan@thinkduncan.com. On this week's show, we've been looking at rural mental health. I'm joined by Emma Picton-Jones. Following the tragic death of her husband, Daniel, she launched a foundation to improve the mental health of farmers across Wales. Daniel had suffered with his mental health and sadly chose to end his life on the 5th of July, 2016. He felt there was no support available for him and was unable to talk about his personal struggles. And following his death, Daniel left a lengthy note. Part of that note alluded to other people who could be helped in a way that he felt he wasn't able to. And so from this, the DPJ Foundation was born.
So my story really began in July 2016. After a lengthy battle with poor mental health, my husband actually took his own life. Although not a farmer, my husband was an integral part of the agricultural community. He was an agricultural contractor, so he spent a lot of time working on farms, but ultimately had the same problems as many farmers face these days with regards to the financial strains of being self-employed, the unknown certainty of being within the agricultural sector. There are constant change, and also it's a very traditional sector as well, so you know that comes with a lot of pressure and stress, as well as everyday pressures and stresses. Unfortunately, Daniel couldn't cope with this and decided that he thought that the best way to deal with his mental health problems was to commit suicide. The reason I'm talking about this in particular this week is because of the importance that it has in speaking about what's happening. With the Farm Safety Foundation's Mind Your Head campaign launching this week, and when they asked me to be part of that campaign, it was really important for me to get involved with this nationally. So far, my foundation and the work that we do works and has worked very well within our community in Pembrokeshire. But to have the opportunity to talk about my experiences and Daniel's experience with mental health and put that across the whole of Wales and the UK was really important for me, and by sharing my story I hope that it encourages other people to be able to get the intention that they need and get the support that they need, rather than choosing the same direction that Daniel chose, because ultimately the support is out there and the support is available. So obviously quite soon after Daniel commit suicide, I decided that something really needed to be done to support people much like him. So this is why I set up the DPJ Foundation. And what we aim to do is to support people in agriculture with mental health problems by providing lots of different ways of support. So first of all, we look at providing education by providing mental health awareness training to people who work within agriculture. So those people like vets, feed reps, anybody who's an integral part of the agricultural community can access mental health awareness, so that they've got a better understanding of mental health and they're better able to support the people that they work with. We also have recently set up our project called Share the Load. So talking therapies is one of the most effective ways of dealing with mental health. But unfortunately, in Pembrokeshire and like most other areas, the waiting lists that go with talking therapies are huge. The waiting list in Pembrokeshire is currently 6 to 9 months. So I set up a counselling referral service, and what we've been able to do, we're able to provide counselling within a week of contact. So we run a 24-hour call line run by volunteers who are Samaritan trained. They are able to take the call and refer, and our admin then refers on to a counsellor. But this isn't your average kind of counselling referral service. What we're able to do is offer a service that actually goes out into the community and offers support in the place that people feel most comfortable. The farming community is quite a unique community, and farmers are very protective over their the way that they live and the way that they are. So being able to provide counselling in a place which suits them, such as on their farm, in a mutual place, we'll be able to provide a really kind of unique service for the people that we want to provide it for. We also are able to provide counselling for people via telephone and online counselling, and this is important because the time restraints and the pressures that go along with modern day farming, farmers don't always find the time to be able to go out onto towns and villages and be and go and find counselling and go and be able to access counselling in a place perhaps 10-15 miles down the road. So what we can do is we can take the counselling to them. Mental health is a huge concern in farming. It's got one of the highest rates of suicide above any other occupation, and this is for many reasons. It's a very traditional sector. It's
also a hugely male-dominated sector, and men are 75% more likely to commit suicide than women. There's a huge amount of accidents and injuries and illnesses that take place on the farms, and so stress is something that many farmers face at some point. So it's important that we're able to support them with this stress and this pressure and be that person that they can go and talk to. But it's also important for them to understand that they're able to get support if they need it, and there are so many fantastic things happening out there. So if you want to find out more information about the Farm Safety Foundation's Mind Your Head campaign, you can visit www.yellowwellies.org.uk. If you want to find out more about the DPJ Foundation, we're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and we also are on www.thedpjfoundation.co.uk.
My thanks to Emma Picton-Jones, Stephanie Barclay and Aaron Nike for joining me in the studio. This is UK Health Radio. Hello, my name's Duncan, and I'll bring you a fresh show every 2 weeks. If you like this show and want more, you can listen to all the different programmes UK Health Radio has to offer. You can choose the live play schedule or download your favourite programme on demand, wherever and wherever you need to. On the last show, I introduce you to my friend Deborah McCabe. Deborah is the ultimate in relaxation. She knows how to chill you out, clear your head, and focus your energy on mentally detoxing. Deborah, welcome back.
Hi, Deborah McCabe here again. How has your week been? Did you manage to switch off from any technology for more than 30 minutes a day? It's quite difficult, isn't it? Let me ask you a question. When was the last time you sat down and did nothing? And by nothing, I mean not reading a paper, not watching TV or scanning through your social media, just sat and did nothing. In all probability, you can't think of a time, which is generally the way for all of us. We live with the knowledge of the world in the palm of our hand, and usually the only time we are not connected or plugged into something is when we are sleeping. But even then, how many of us are woken in the night by a ding? That could represent anything. It could be a catastrophe, a life-changing event, or a fabulous announcement, or even an update from Amazon telling you about books for 99p, which is probably more realistic. The trouble with all this interaction is that our minds are becoming overwhelmed with the amount of information it is having to process in a very short space of time. Our minds are constantly jumping from one thing to another. One minute we could be dealing with a problem at work. The next you notice a critical comment about you or your team on Twitter. And then an event pops up that you're supposed to attend later that evening. The phone starts to ring and it's your partner reminding you about a parent's evening. All of that within a few minutes. Sound familiar? All of this interaction can have an effect on our mental health and well-being because, like the body, the mind needs to rest, and it needs good quality rest. Some people can find this in other ways, in exercise or gardening, but some people like me find it in meditation. Due to this, I decided to run monthly Detox Your Mind retreat days in Aylesford Priory, which is in Kent. The day starts with everyone handing over their phones, which is probably the most difficult part of the day. And people are truly shocked at how hard they find it to part with their phone, even though it's just for a few hours. The rest of the day consists of various guided meditations, which are led by me, a light lunch. Then we take a mindful walk around the beautiful grounds of the Priory. Even this simple action of walking mindfully reawakens your senses to things that you have been missing out on. The fallen leaves, the moss on the ground, or the sounds of the birds. At the end of our day, most people really don't want their phones back. If you wanted to join me on one of these, visit www.meditatetosilence.com and go to the Detox Your Mind booking page. That's it from me this week. Next week, we will talk about breathing. And you know how powerful it can be. It's amazing.
We're coming towards the end of the show, so we'll close this week with wise words. The truth is, unless you let go, unless you forgive yourself, unless you forgive the situation, unless you realise that the situation is over, you cannot begin to move forward. Don't forget, if you do have any mental health concerns or have been affected by anything raised on today's programme, please consult your GP or find a counselling service to talk to. You've been listening to The Therapy Suite with me, Duncan Ellison, only on UK Health Radio. Stay well, keep smiling, and see you next time.